Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, April 18th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chonga Kandemiri.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Economic analysts hail President Robert Mugabe's clarification regarding the operation of foreign banks in Zimbabwe and the indigenization policy.
Two heroines are laid to rest at the Zimbabwe National Heroes Acre.
We thank these two women for the exemplary lives that they lived.
A judge orders police not to interfere with the planned MDCT protest.
We are very happy that the High Court has simply endorsed what was a very clear position at law.
And Zimbabwean youth demand a big stake in the country's political processes.
These are stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Two heroines, Victoria Chitepo and Vivian Mwashita Mchicho, were laid to rest at the Zimbabwe National Heroes Acre today. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi attended the funeral and filed this report.
Thousands of Zimbabweans gathered at the National Heroes Acre to bid farewell to two heroines, Victoria Chitepo and Vivian Mwashita Mchicho. This became the first time in Zimbabwe's history that two nationalists were buried at the national shrine in a single day. Officiating at the burial of the two heroines, President Robert Mugabe told mourners that Zimbabweans should emulate the bravery and courage that was shown by the two during and after the country's war of liberation.
We thank these two women for the exemplary lives that they lived. And we say to other women, and especially to the young girls, there are the two examples. Choose. If you want to be a Mwashita, follow. But your fight must now be a fight in order to assist government in transforming our economy, in improving the lives of the people.
A representative of the Chitepo family, who is the son of the deceased national icon, Zhenyika Chitepo, said his mother worked hard in uplifting the lives of Zimbabweans and others in the Southern African region.
Through her life, she really believed in a better future for all Zimbabweans, for all Africans, and for all of humanity. And it is that faith, that undeterred faith, that kept her focused and able to achieve what she managed to achieve.
A representative of the Mwashita family, Nyasha Mwashita, who is Vivian Mwashita's daughter, said her mother was advocating for Zimbabweans to be self-reliant.
She had a passion for helping people and making a difference. Our fondest memories of her is when we used to attend rallies with her during her campaign to become an MP. Everyone used to call her my heavy, and this would always bring a smile to her face.
War veterans leader Chris Muchangwa encouraged the Zimbabweans to work hard to ensure that Chitepo and Mwashita's vision of a vibrant Zimbabwean economy is realized.
My Chitepo is a history of unflinching commitment to the cause of freedom, whether, you know, and for her, the cause of freedom knew no national boundaries, it knew no tribe, she was the ultimate internationalist. As for Vivian, a woman combatant in the field confronting the enemy.
First Lady Grace Mugabe, former Vice President Joyce Mujuru, and MDCT leader Morgan Tsvangirai were among politicians who did not attend the burial of Chitepo and Mwashita. Tsvangirai spokesperson Luke Tamborinyoka said Tsvangirai and the top leadership of his party did not attend the funeral because ZANU-PF was monopolizing state functions.
It is regrettable. What has since happened is that ZANU-PF privatizes and politicizes some of these events, which in actual fact is a belittling of such national heroes, venerated and dignified heroes like the late Mwashita.
Studio 7 failed to reach Mujuru's People First and other opposition parties. Victoria Chitepo, who was the widow of veteran nationalist Herbert Chitepo, held some cabinet positions and was once a member of parliament. Mwashita, who also fought in Zimbabwe's liberation struggle of the 1970s, worked at ZANU-PF headquarters before she was attested into the Central Intelligence Organization, where she served until 1995. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Economic analysts are hailing President Robert Mugabe's clarification yesterday regarding the operation of foreign banks in Zimbabwe and the indigenization policy. In a statement, Mr. Mugabe explained that banks and the insurance sector are administered under the Banking Act and the Insurance Act, and not the indigenization policy, as Indigenization Minister Patrick Juao had urged in his public spate with Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa. Juao had threatened to shut down foreign banks that he said had failed to subject to the Black Empowerment Law that mandates foreign firms to transfer a 51% stake to locals. Economic analyst Masimba Kuchera tells Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo that Mr. Mugabe's intervention will bring stability and certainty in the financial sector.
We have said it and we have said it many times that the banks and insurance companies have the acts that that govern them. And I think the president, in introducing clarity to this issue, has also helped minimize the risk of people running on banks wanting to take their money, because this is a very sensitive sector, the financial sector. And any sort of signal or message that things are not well, people will be going to withdraw every little bit that they have saved there. So I think the president, considering that we even have a cash crisis at the moment in the country, has done a good thing to be able to come and clarify the issue.
Would you say his intervention is sufficient enough to bring stability and certainty in the financial sector?
It is sufficient to bring stability. It is a bit long overdue, but I think that considering that the country is trying to build bridges with the IMF, we have currently the Minister of Finance and the RBZ governor there in Washington at the spring meeting. I think it brings stability and it brings an end to the meddling by the indigenization minister.
That was economic analyst Masimba Kuchera. In a related story, Bulawayo businessman and former Affirmative Action Group official Sam Ncube says despite the clarity, the Indigenization and Economic Empowerment Act remains a disastrous law that's scaring away investors.
The biggest problem we have as a country, there's no synchronization of policies through the line ministries. Our policies are not consistent. As a result, other people try to implement things which are not implementable. It causes a lot of discord, it causes a lot of confusion, even to the local people, leave alone the investors who are supposed to come into the country and invest, because it's confusion. The other hand does not know what the other hand is doing. I think we are now mature. We are 36 years independent. We should be serious about the future of this country and the future of our children and their children's children. The confusion which you are seeing is because of a few misguided elements. It's a few misguided elements who are benefiting at the expense of the majority. The young people of Zimbabwe need employment. Everyone here in Zimbabwe needs investment. Our factories have become churches. And we are saying, what is it that we can do as a nation?
You were once a champion of Black empowerment, working with the Affirmative Action Group. And one might ask, what has changed? Because the indigenization law seeks the same objectives that you fought for.
When we formed our organization, Black people were not involved in the mainstream economy. But now a lot of our Black people are involved in the mainstream economy. Some are even owning banks.
That was Bulawayo, your businessman and former Affirmative Action Group official Sam Ncube.
In a related development, Central Bank Governor John Mangujga and some senior state officials are attending the annual IMF World Bank meeting in Washington, D.C., with Zimbabwe already having made moves to seek new lines of credit from the international finance institutions. Lenders have asked the country to address several issues, including the compensation of whites who lost their land under Zimbabwe's controversial land reforms before the Southern African nation gets fresh loans. Zimbabwe owes the World Bank, IMF, and several institutions millions of dollars. Mangujga speaks with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu about the ongoing meeting.
The meeting that we are attending in Washington, African Freedom of Zimbabwe, is a member of the IMF and World Bank, and we are with a duty bound to attend as the governor myself and as the governor for the World Bank and IMF. And those meetings are critical because that's when we exchange ideas and ways of looking at a global economic environment. As you know, Zimbabwe is also one of the global countries that is also affected by commodity price movement. It's affected by what happens in the rest of the world. And also at the same time, trying to ensure that we also have right meeting with the Victorian partners who are talking about the promotion of our re-engagement process.
What is significant to Zimbabweans, of course, is the issue of new funding. Is this likely to come up?
I said we use the same meetings to arrange sideline meetings with our foreign partners and multilateral institutions or creditors to ensure that at least they understand where we are and where we are going. So we don't expect a resolution from this NEDAW meeting.
That was John Mangujga, Zimbabwe Central Bank Governor, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Washington.
Hello there. To mark Zimbabwe's 36th independence anniversary, Studio 7 will be giving out solar-powered radios or T-shirts for our lucky winners. Simply invite 10 friends to join our VOA Studio 7 Facebook page. Ask them to like our page. Keep their names so we can verify your claim. We will also be running a daily competition for lucky winners. You only need to answer a simple question about Zimbabwe's independence. The draw will be conducted April 18th, Independence Day. Don't be left out.
The question today is, who was Zimbabwe's first vice president? The answer to our question yesterday is 1963.
The High Court Judge Justice Happiness Joe has ruled that police should not interfere with a march planned for tomorrow by the opposition MDC formation led by Morgan Tsvangirai. The court action followed indications by the police that they won't provide manpower for the MDC to protest over poverty, corruption and missing diamond proceeds of up to $15 billion. MDCT spokesman Obet Gutu tells Studio 7 his party welcomes the court ruling as it shows that the judiciary in Zimbabwe is still alive.
We are very happy that the High Court has simply endorsed what was a very clear position at law. And we are actually surprised that the police had actually sought to say we should not proceed with our demonstration because they do not have the legal basis. We are very happy and we are raring to go.
Are you working with other political parties or organizations?
I can confirm that the issues that we are addressing are actually issues that touch on the living standards of Zimbabweans across the political spectrum, to such an extent that we have actually been receiving solidarity messages from other political parties, we have actually wished us a successful demonstration tomorrow. And I'm not even surprised if even some disgruntled and unhappy members of ZANU-PF who are disgruntled by the way the economy is being mismanaged join us tomorrow. This is a demonstration not only for MDCP activists or supporters. It is a demonstration for all patriotic Zimbabweans.
That was Obet Gutu, MDCT spokesman, speaking with us from Harare.
Hello, Zimbabwe. This month, we are commemorating Zimbabwe's 36th independence anniversary. The 18th of April 1980 was a significant moment celebrated by millions of people, including the late great Bob Nesta Marley, on Independence Day in Harare. Because that's the only way we can overcome a little trouble. What are your thoughts of that moment? And what about 36 years later? Send us your thoughts on our WhatsApp number 001-202-465-0318. That number again, 001-202-465-0318. We are also on Facebook and Twitter.
Coming up
in the Diaspora Forum, we are chatting to Zimbabwean Minister of Religion, Pastor Letina Jeranyama.
And a Zimbabwean parent speaks out on her child missing in Kuwait.
Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
A U.S. newspaper is reporting that federal investigators paid professional hackers to help them crack into the Apple iPhone used by one of the terrorists who killed 14 people last December in San Bernardino, California.
A New Jersey judge has ruled that U.S. Republican presidential candidate Ted Cruz is an American citizen and, as a result, can participate in the New Jersey primary election on June 7th.
Belgian prosecutors say they've released the three people detained yesterday in the investigation of the November 13 Paris attacks, in which 130 people died.
Federal agency in Panama have raided the offices of the Mossack Fonseca law firm, which is linked to a number of offshore accounts associated with world leaders.
And revelations from the Panama Papers leak back up what the Ugandan government already knew, that a foreign oil and gas company tried to skirt a $400 million tax bill.
An interdenominational Christian organization formed by a Zimbabwean minister of religion, Pastor Letina Jeranyama, who is also a lecturer at a Boston University in the USA, is holding its annual conference on April 22nd in Boston. Pastor Jeranyama says this year the interdenominational Women of Faith is expecting guests from Zimbabwe and Ghana. She tells Studio 7's Praxidis Jeremiah that the conference provides an opportunity for women to interact, share ideas, pray for each other, grow spiritually, and just network for business opportunity, since most members are African women immigrants in the diaspora.
Interdenominational Faith is a women's ministry that started way back in 2010. I was invited by the wife of the Bishop Henry Mujare from Bulawayo, Zimbabwe, to come and minister to the women. I was really surprised because I had never had such an opportunity. But later on, it became very clear that God had to take me back to my church back home to launch me into the women's ministry. When I returned back to the USA from Zimbabwe, I felt an urge to start an interdenominational Women of Faith ministry, which comprises of different churches and different nationalities, women from different countries, with an aim and a vision to help the women to improve their spiritual lives, one, to support each other, thirdly, to learn different things, educational opportunities, because learning is lifelong. We can learn a lot from each other. And also to do some projects back home in Africa where we came from.
How big is the organization right now? Are you just based in Boston or you have branches elsewhere?
Yeah, our main branch is in Boston, but we also have meetings in New Hampshire. We have some members there in New Hampshire and we meet there sometimes. And also we have a branch in New York. But we are in the pipeline of, we've been invited in India, been invited in Kenya, and I'm also working with some other ladies in Zimbabwe to start the Interdenominational Women of Faith.
This year you have a big conference, which you do annually. Can you briefly tell us what it entails?
We have a conference that's coming up April 22 this year, ending April 24. We have several powerful anointed women that are coming to minister to us. We have Overseer Rudo Ruzi from Forward in Faith Ministry coming from Atlanta, Georgia. We have the wife of Dr. R.F. Utaunashe, the wife of Apostle Andrew Utaunashe, Dr. R.F. Utaunashe coming from Harare, Zimbabwe. And we have Lady Reverend Adelaide Howard Mills coming from Accra, Ghana. And we have a gospel recording artist, Minister Tekshua Zamanure, coming with his wife all the way from Harare, Zimbabwe.
If I happen to get interested in coming to this conference, how do I go about it?
Visit our website online at www.womenoffaithministry.org, or you can call us at 1-508-353-4646.
What exactly are we looking forward to this year's conference? What's so different from last year?
This year's conference, one of the things that we are going to do, we are going to have a women's forum. And also, because of the other conferences that we have had, some people want to bring their husbands. So we have some combined sessions. There are specific sessions for the men, that the men will be doing their own thing. My husband, Dr. Peter Jeranyama, will be heading that. So that's something that's new, that's different. And also, your children, too, we have an exciting program for the kids that minister and cater to them according to their developmental level.
The theme for this year
is Arise and Occupy Till Jesus Comes. It's taken from the book of Judges, chapter 5, verse 6 to 7, with the prophetess Deborah, this woman who said, in the days of Shamgar, the highways were unoccupied and travelers walked along byways until I, Deborah, arose as a mother in Israel. So this is our theme. We want the women to arise and occupy their God-given places.
That was Pastor Letina Jeranyama, founder of a Christian interdenominational women's organization called Interdenominational Women of Faith, speaking with Studio 7's Praxidis Jeremiah from Boston, Massachusetts.
Hello, all young people out there. I am Trione Sojani, your host for Time to Engage. We have a new, vibrant, energetic, inspirational segment. This is Time to Engage. We have hot topics for discussion, like life coaching, motivation, leadership, health, entrepreneurship. This also includes music, social media, and everything else you want to know. We will talk to various experts to help us with these discussions coming from Washington. Send a message to our WhatsApp number 001-202-465-0318. Hashtag time to engage.
Don't miss it here on Studio 7. Some youth in Mashonaland West Province say there is need for young people to occupy influential positions of authority in government if Zimbabwe is to realize missed ideals of the country's liberation struggle of the 1970s. Our correspondent Arthur Chigoriwa has more from the provincial capital.
Some of the youth claim that the current leadership is insensitive to the needs of Zimbabwe's young people, a situation that has led to the nation's failure to implement the ideals of liberation struggle, which include one person, one vote, and equitable redistribution of land. 25-year-old Chinoy based Delight Benge, who holds a university degree, claims that the current government ZANU-PF leadership has continued with oppressive systems that were political pillars of Rhodesia, once led by Ian Douglas Smith. This includes what Benge calls oppressive laws like the Access to Information and Protection of Privacy Act, Public Order and Security Act, or POSA, and several others that are almost a flip side of the repealed Law and Order Maintenance Act of 1960, which infringed on people's freedoms of association, assembly, movement and expression. Benge says the only way out of this is to vote in MRC for a new government.
When we go to our independence, the system of governance that was being used was at large a white system to repress the blacks. And that system was inherited as it was. So it was a perpetuation of that system, which is exclusionary in nature, and it has just gone on to exclude the majority. We have to trace the one man, one vote principle. That in a way can work, but that is if we feel that the electoral system is free and fair. We can always use that whereby youth constituted to 70% of the population, they can go to vote in mass and give victory, which victory will be victory for the youth.
Another local youth, Takunda Madzana, says most young people in Zimbabwe have over the years been used as political tools by some parties. As a result, he believes that they can only play a critical role in bringing social, economic, and political transformation in the country if they turn down undemocratic ideologies of most parties.
The youth should be seen to be active in politics. This thing of only being active in politics when it comes to elections is just as activists moving around, putting posters and not being active in decision-making must come to an end. Youth must be seen to be taking positions of leadership because we are a generation of the most educated, we are the generation of the most active, and we are the most energetic.
Persuade Chirinda concurs, noting that most Zimbabweans feel that they are being oppressed by the ruling elite to exercise their rights just exactly like what happened under Rhodesian rulers. He is convinced that the youth can bring positive change in the country if they get into state institutions.
Rights are there on paper. They are not really being practiced, as we can simply see. You only have that freedom before you speak. After I say anything, that freedom is quickly taken away. We have to be included in the institutions, in the ministries, justice ministry, home affairs ministry. There must be a youth there who will understand me when a youth makes some noise.
Bandit-based youth Patrick Nyamweda also believes that youth should be involved in policy formulation in order to cater for their needs.
The fact that the youth needs to be first trained, they acquire agricultural skills and should be given the opportunity to make decisions in the policy formulation.
According to Benge, this is not enough, as youth should always refuse to be abused by political parties.
We need to change our attitude from being used to further the interests of the Madalas. They have to come up and be the representative, be the formulators of the policies, and at the same time be the implementers, rather than being used to try and lure other youths or to beat other youths to follow their way of thinking. We should try and find each other and come out to be representatives, to come out and also be leaders like what they did in the 1970s.
Zimbabwean youth constitute more than 60% of the total population. Most of them are currently unemployed due to the country's current serious social, economic and political problems. Reporting for Studio 7 in Chinoy, this is Arthur Chigoriwa.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. today, when our host will be talking with listeners and experts about the economic situation in the country and also the IMF and World Bank meetings going on here in Washington, D.C.
Now to recap on today's top stories.
Economic analysts hail President Robert Mugabe's clarification regarding the operation of foreign banks in Zimbabwe and the indigenization policy.
Two heroines have been laid to rest at the Zimbabwe National Heroes Acre.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.